Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, who are the 100 most powerful people in New York City? Stay tuned and you will find out who is on the 100 most powerful list and who is off the list now that Bill de Blasio is mayor. And we'll ask what it means for the other 8 billion of us. Also today, the New York Times obtains more emails showing how the Christie administration tied Sandy money to a Hoboken development project. A 2-day traffic jam in Atlanta. Did someone down there fail to endorse Chris Christie? But seriously, why you're not a nice person if you make fun of the South for having problems with 2 inches of snow. Law professor Glenn Reynolds, the man behind the libertarian Instapundit blog, he wants to break the college monopoly on professional credentials. And with ticket prices falling and empty hotel rooms calling, we'll open up the phones today for anyone in businesses hoping to profit from Super Bowl week, your free classifieds of the air for our tri-state listeners. But first, the New York politics site, City and State, publishes an annual list of the 100 most powerful New Yorkers. This year's list is just out, and it's interesting to compare it to last year's for an indication of how the election of Bill de Blasio has reshuffled the deck when it comes to influence in New York City. In fact, half of the list of 100 is new. Half of last year's 100 most powerful are gone from the list entirely. So we'll talk about that and two new, let's call them behavior issues, affecting New York politicians. In the headlines today, one Republican, one Democrat. Morgan Pechma is editor-in-chief of City and State. Hi, Morgan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
And to begin with the obvious, Bill de Blasio himself moved up to number one on the 100 most powerful people in New York City from number 28 last year. My only question about that is I didn't know the Public Advocate's Office had enough power to be ranked 28.
Well, it was that's right. Actually, Letitia James ranks lower on the list as the new Public Advocate. But one of the things we were taking into consideration was that Bill de Blasio was a potential mayor. And because the mayor's race was looming, we thought that that was a reflection of his possible growing power and that was prescient in that regard.
And in general, how do you measure power for the sake of this list?
Well, it's interesting. We took a slightly different metric this year because last year we did a lot of engagement with our readers. We did online polls, and we found that there was a lot of ballot stuffing and a lot of suggestions that were kind of ridiculous.
Ballot stuffing in a politics poll? I'm shocked.
Yeah. There were some really low-level council members who got an extraordinary number of votes. So this year we actually took it in the spirit of true New York City government behind closed doors. We made it as less transparent, and we talked to a lot of the insiders who we felt really had a grasp on this. And our readers are political junkies, so we have to have credibility with our own readers. And so, we had off the record conversations, and we kind of arrived at a list that we felt was representative of what people say behind closed doors.
And half your list is new, not even on last year's 100 most powerful. I think 49 exactly.
That's correct.
Are new, right? Who, for example?
Well, one of the people – actually, there are several members of the top 10 who are new, including Anthony Shoris at number 9.
The first deputy mayor, Bill de Blasio's right hand.
That's right. And, he's a person who may be unfamiliar to most people at home, but now he is overseeing all of the city agencies. And so he actually has a role as first deputy mayor that is larger than any in the Bloomberg administration. At number 10 is another new addition to list. And perhaps a controversial one, we listed our new First Lady, Shirlane McCray, who seems to not just be a First Lady, but to be the most trusted advisor to the new mayor.
The mayor has made that explicit. And so topping the list, and again, it's the most powerful people in New York City, not New York State.
And New York City politics.
New York City politics. Aha. De Blasio, number one, then Governor Cuomo, number two, then Schumer, Melissa Mark Viverito, the new council speaker, and number 5, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Why do you rank Schumer above Mark Viverito since Schumer's job is in Washington?
Well, Christine Quinn was number 3 on the list last year. Again, that was a reflection of the fact that she was the mayoral frontrunner at the time. We thought that Melissa Mark Viverito, she's been in office for all of 21 or 22 days. And so, you know, she hasn't gotten a chance to show what kind of clout she is going to wield in government. One of the things that she has talked about is a decentralization of power from the Speaker's office, empowering more of the individual council members. If she is ceding power, you know, certainly that would be a reflection of where she stands on the list. Chuck Schumer, often talked about as a potential next majority leader of the U.S. Senate, just a juggernaut on the national stage, but also he is one of the most engaged elected officials on the local level. It's amazing how many small meetings you will go to around the state and you will see the United States Senator there. So he has his hands in involved in every part of New York politics.
Mostly the list is of politicians and a few media people. So for Bloomberg appointees, for example, have gone from top 10 to off the list entirely, Ray Kelly, people like that. But I'm interested in the private power brokers and how much their influence waxes and wanes or doesn't, because that's who runs these politicians on behalf of their interests. And that's how we, the other 8 million people of the city, are affected. So real estate lobbyists, union leaders, banking interests. For example, I see that despite the election of de Blasio, Catherine Wild from the Partnership for New York City, a leading big business group, went up a little bit to number 15, one notch above Dan Cantor from the Union Backed Working Families Party, very close to de Blasio, higher than the school's chancellor or the UFT president who come next, and then the healthcare workers union chief, George Gresham. So do we learn from Kathy Wild's high ranking that the banks and real estate developers from the partnership will be no less powerful in the de Blasio supposedly equality era?
Well, I think your listeners are going to be shocked to even think that that could be a possibility. You know, Catherine Wild is the number one liaison between politics and the business world. And, you know, Mayor de Blasio has, as a candidate and as a mayor, has made very clear that he wants to have strong channels with the business world. I mean, the real estate is the lifeblood of New York City. The Wall Street is such an essential player here. And Kathy Wild is the person who connects those worlds. And, you know, in the previous administration, it was really Michael Bloomberg. And Michael Bloomberg, who is one up on the list above her, you know, because he has stepped back from the stage, at least for the time being, Kathy Wild's importance on the city stage has actually grown.
Mayor Bloomberg himself, by the way, is still high on the list, as you point out, number 14, even though his deputies are mostly booted altogether. What do you think Bloomberg's influence is going forward?
Well, I mean, Mayor Bloomberg was arguably our most powerful mayor in our history, not just because he was the mayor, but because he was one of the wealthiest people in the city. He is a media mogul. He was one of the largest philanthropists. And, you know, he has an outsized influence. And I suspect that he will be the most powerful former mayor that we have ever had. And he has the resources. For instance, if he wants to be a thorn in the side of his successor, he can really bring to bear a great deal of power. And so, you know, Michael Bloomberg, we thought that, you know, he is still a juggernaut in New York City.
So far not being a thorn in de Blasio's side, not trying to influence things that I've seen. Do you know about anything?
No. I think it will depend upon how much Mayor de Blasio tries to depart from Mayor Bloomberg's legacy.
My guest is Morgan Pechma. He's the editor of the publication City and State, which is out every day online. And you publish a print edition too, right?
Yes. Every 2 weeks we put our magazine, and we are there in your inbox every morning with first read and last read emails, and then all throughout the day with updates on the web.
And it's about New York City politics and New York State politics. Listeners, you want to chime in on any of this? Who do you think has too much power in New York City? Who do you think has too little power in New York City? Any of these Power 100 on this list that you want to ask about, or however you want to participate in this, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll also get into some of today's news. But on this business juggernaut still having a lot of influence. You know that bizarre statement that the Wall Street Journal published from a Silicon Valley billionaire the other day? He said the way things are going in the United States, there may soon be a Kristallnacht against the 1%. Now, never mind how offensive that is to Holocaust survivors, wow. to most of the American public. Do you find much of that sentiment among New York's wealthiest at the dawn of the de Blasio era?
Well, I was actually talking to a person who will remain nameless last night at our launch party when we unveiled this list. And he was making the point that those who are staging the revolution right now should take out as many members of the 1% as possible right now, because there will inevitably be a counter-revolution. And then the progressives will get it all the worse.
Who said that?
The person will remain nameless for the time being.
All right. And take out, I guess you mean take out to dinner, right?
Indeed.
The question that I have that I stated before that I'll ask you even more explicitly about now regarding the people on this list is not just how much power they have, but what do they want? So who among the people of New York gets hurt by these players having more power or less power this year, and who gets helped? Any way to make a generalization about that from all this churn on your list from one year to the next?
Well, you know, this list represents so many different interests. I mean, many of your listeners might be surprised that there are only 27 elected officials on the list. And as you were saying, it's really the shadow power brokers who, those in the know, realize that, you know, one of the tests that we had was the phone call test. Like, if you get a call from one of these people, who is it that you are going to pick up their phone call immediately or return their phone call if you've missed it instantly? And, you know, for most of the city council members, it's like, yeah, I'll get back to you in a couple hours, you know. But if someone like Kathy Wilde were to call you or Preet Bharara, you might very well – you would immediately return Preet Bharara's call and you might call your lawyer first.
Yeah, U.S. attorney. 212-433-WNYC. Andre in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I have a question. Why should the union be involved in politics, and why are they so most powerful?
Thank you. Unions, union leaders are high on your list. More public sector unions than private sector unions?
Well, it's a mixture. In the top 20, we have two union leaders, Michael Mulgrew and George Gresham. George Gresham was one of the people who the head of 1199. He shot up 47 spots on our list this year, and it's one of the reasons was that 1199 played an integral role in electing Mayor de Blasio. Your listener is absolutely right. This new administration in many ways represents the rise of the unions that were, very much kept on the back burner by Mayor Bloomberg. He didn't give them a contract since 2009, most of the unions. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the unions wield their new clout with the incoming administration.
And you could hear in the caller's voice that he doesn't like the
unions. He doesn't think highly of unions.
He resents the power that they have. And I think a lot of New Yorkers have this kind of conflictedness about the role of public sector unions in politics in New York City. On the one hand, we want our cops and firefighters and teachers to have decent deals and think that they should be, you know, fairly compensated for what they do and have decent health care and pensions and everything. On the other hand, there's an essential conflict of interest when unions have the power to elect a mayor or a controller who's then going to turn around and be the one negotiating across the table from them on behalf of the taxpayers.
That's right. And, you know, this gets back to your last question is who among the people on the power list is really taking a holistic view of what is the greater good for the city, right? Are all these people just representing kind of narrow interests that ultimately it's good for them, right? If you're elected a union president, your number one objective is to get the best possible deal for your members when you sit down to negotiate. That's not to say that the UFT doesn't care about the education system, but Michael Mulgrew, at the end of the day, he has to get the best deal for his 200,000 members. And so that can be very frustrating for the 8 million of us who do not necessarily have any interest in any group. And at the same time, we're hoping that people will come together and we could look at any one segment and criticize them for being self-interested.
Robert in Rego Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Brian. How you doing, guy? I want to ask you, Bruce Ratner, I know, is on the list. His number has gone down. I'm just curious, and I don't know him personally. He's done tremendous positive things. He has the potential of building tens of thousands of apartments. He's someone who the new mayor will work with. Why are you putting him down? A guy like him should be in the top five.
And, of course, Bruce Ratner is the developer of the Big Atlantic Yards Project. Barclays Center and all that, which was so controversial when it was in the planning stage.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll have to correct your listener. Bruce Ratner actually moved up 16 spots on our list this year to number 43. And in large part, he was a major supporter of Mayor de Blasio. Mayor de Blasio, despite his progressive image, was a controversial supporter of the Atlantic Yards project, which was very much fell in his old council district, and he has a close relationship with Bruce Ratner, and we expect that Bruce Ratner's influence, which was already great in the last administration, will likely grow in terms of the real estate industry.
Julie in Brooklyn, who wants to talk about Mayor Bloomberg. Julie, you're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning.
Hey.
Hi. I'd like to see Bloomberg take some of his personal dollars and buy Long Island College Hospital and make it into a medical institution that is innovative and makes New York City have a totally new face in healthcare. I think he should get a think tank together and create a whole new kind of medical institution. There's lots of people in New York from all over the world who have healthcare needs and are healthcare, you know, have studied in other parts of the world. I think we can make a great institution.
It's really, really interesting, Julie. That's not an outlandish idea. You know, that is not crazy.
And he does have a think tank together called Bloomberg Associates now.
Well, and he's famously interested in public health. And so here is this New York City institution that the neighborhood cares about. We know Mayor de Blasio, as candidate de Blasio, got himself arrested to make a show of his support for not closing Litch, that act of civil disobedience. But Bloomberg is a public health guy. It's not a crazy idea, you know. But, of course, we could do a whole show. We could probably do a whole month on New Yorker suggestions for how Michael Bloomberg should spend his money.
Indeed, we could.
All right, Morgan Peckma, editor-in-chief of City and State, which covers politics in New York City and New York State. And if you want to leave any more comments on our website about this list of the 100 most powerful people in New York City, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr Show. But in our remaining few minutes, let's touch on two politicians who have different types of, maybe we'll call them behavior issues, in the headlines today. One is Republican Congressman Michael Grimm of Staten Island threatening a New York reporter, a New York One reporter, with physical harm at the State of the Union address the other night. We'll play that clip in a second. But I see you had already bumped him from 74th on last year's list to off the top 100 most powerful this year. That was before this incident, which is making national news. Why was that in the case of Congressman Michael Grimm?
Well, I hope your listeners will think that this gives our list some greater credibility. There have been a number of federal investigations for some time that have seemed to be closing in on the congressman involving straw donors to his campaign, to his campaigns. And recently, one of his ex-girlfriends was arrested for allegedly funneling $10,000 illegally into his campaign fund. And so, you know, one of the reasons he might have had that outburst is it seems like the pressure is mounting around Congressman Grimm.
So the incident that we'll hear about came because, I should say that we'll hear, we're going to hear it, because reporter Michael Scotto asked Grimm about this investigation into his office, and we just heard the background. So here's first the end of the original interview with New York One's Michael Scotto. Just after the State of the Union, Scotto was asking Grimm his reaction to the speech, and then...
And just finally, before we let you go, since we have you here, we haven't had a chance to kind of talk about some
I'm
of the...
I'm not speaking about anything that's off topic. This is only about the president.
Well, what about...
Thank you.
All right, so Congressman Michael Grimm does not want to talk about some of the allegations concerning his campaign finances. We wanted to get him on camera on that, but he, as you saw, refused to talk about that. Back to you.
And walked away. And Grimm didn't like even that attempt to bring up the investigation. And he was so mad after walking away, comes back over to Scotto, not realizing the cameras are still rolling. This is very off mic, so listen closely. And if you can't hear the words, I'll read the transcript afterwards. But here's the 25 seconds of audio.
What?
Let me be clear to you. You have to do that to me again.
No,
you're not mayor. You're not mayor.
I realized that was very hard to hear. So Grimm comes over and he's obviously angry, and Scotto says, why? Grimm says, let me be clear to you. If you ever do that to me again, I'll throw you off this effing balcony. Scotto, why? Why? I just wanted to ask you, Grimm, if you ever do that to me again. Scotto, why? Why? It's a valid question. Grimm, don't tell me what's blank. No, no, you're not man enough. You're not man enough. I'll break you in half like a boy. So, well, we know that he felt his manhood was challenged, or that he responds, Congressman Grimm, in those terms sometimes. And he then apologized. He apologized, I guess, in a phone call and then in a letter to New York One. So my question to you is, do you think this affects his reelection chances? It's never automatic for a Republican to begin with in New York City, even on Staten Island. So does this add to a narrative about Michael Grimm?
Well, it's interesting. Initially, Michael Grimm did not apologize. He issued a statement very much kind of doubling down on what he had said and said that he was right to do so. And then after there was – this became a national story and he was really being pilloried in the press and by elders in his own party, then he issued that apology. And the problem for him is that this isn't a one-off, but this is part of a pattern of behavior, of volatility that dates back to in 1999. Incident where an off-duty NYPD officer accused Congressman Grimm, who was a member of the FBI at the time and moonlighting as a bouncer, of threatening a patron at a club and waving his gun around and shouting expletives. And those of us in the media know that he has this reputation for flying off the handle and not taking tough questions well. And so, you know, this could be it seems like it's a very explosive situation for him. But I have to say that it is secondary to these federal investigations that are really closing in on his campaign finances and have touched either his chief of staff or himself. It is unclear right now, but it certainly does not look good for his future career when he was once one of the great rising stars in his party.
The other issue is the cover of the Daily News today regarding the new Queensborough president, Melinda Katz, and the issue of all things is Guardian Angels founder Curtis Sliwa's divorce from his ex-wife. He now lives with Katz. They're raising their two children together. But the ex-wife, Mary Sliwa, claims in court that she has a voicemail from Katz stating that Sliwa slept with Katz. Katz slept with Sliwa on the night before his wedding to Mary years ago. Now, this is a personal story. But reportedly, there is voicemail evidence about the new borough president having been willing to have an affair with another public figure on the night before his wedding to another woman. In her words on this voicemail, assuming this documentary evidence exists as it's reported, does this potentially affect Katz as borough president in any way?
Well, there were a lot of stories about these divorce proceedings throughout the election leading up to Melinda Katz winning. And she didn't cruise into office. It was a very tight election between herself and former Councilman Peter Vallone. And, you know, there is just so much bad behavior from our elected officials, whether it's sexual harassment, taking bribes. I mean, we have multiple indicted elected officials who are currently serving in the state legislature. And so, you know, I wonder if it will really mean anything to New Yorkers who have just grown, you know, desensitized to the absolutely appalling behavior of our elected officials.
Queens, time will tell. Morgan Pekla is editor-in-chief of City and State, which covers New York City, New York State politics. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. And we will be relaunching our website on Monday, cityandstateny.com.
Great. Coming up next, the New York Times obtains more emails showing how the Christie administration tied Sandy money to a Hoboken development project. We'll talk to the two New York Times reporters on that story.